everybody. Got to give some props today to WebMD for our topic. I read an article titled, Ways Your Smartphone Can Wreck Your Health. Well, that got me thinking. Your cell phone probably goes with you everywhere. You probably check it multiple times a day. Have you ever checked it while you were in the bathroom? When's the last time you cleaned it? Ever? It makes sense that there may be bacteria, viruses, and germs on it. Your cell phone's warm. Germs can grow. One study found that 1 in 6 phones has E. coli bacteria on it, probably because people don't wash their hands very well. On the brighter side, it's a hard surface, which usually makes it harder for germs to survive. Still, it's a good idea to wipe it down from time to time. Let's go over some of the harms to your health from our friend and constant companion, the cell phone. There's this thing called text neck syndrome. Too much time looking down at your phone strains your neck muscles, causes tightness, spasms. You might even get nerve pain that goes to your back or through your shoulders and down your arm. You ever hold your phone between your shoulder and your ear while you're doing something else? It's not a very natural position. You do it for too long and you'll notice that your neck hurts. When the damage is done, we got to run for heating pads and over-the-counter drugs to ease our stiffness. The next two are similar but different. They have to do with your safety and may involve the safety of others. I'm talking about texting and driving. Now we know this one. We're all warned. Just don't do it. Sending a text takes 5 seconds of your attention. That seems so quick, but it is not harmless. At 55 miles an hour, your car can go about the length of a football field, and that's more than enough space to cause a serious car wreck. Scientists figure that this may be as much as 23 times more likely to crash, and the risk is the same whether you're typing or voice texting. Now, I myself have to back off of this one. I like to dictate my ideas for blogs and maybe even case notes when I'm driving. So perhaps writing this segment is as much for me as it is for anyone else. Talking and driving. Now, maybe you think it's pretty safe to talk when you drive. It's really not. You're 4 times more likely to crash when you do. It's a cause in more than a million crashes a year, or 20% of all car wrecks, including those that injure and kill people. If you really need to make or take a call, pull over. Do that for yourself. Stack the deck to live. Or for those in your car, or for those who you're going to encounter while on the road, or to avoid an injury, or a lawsuit, whatever it takes. Next came surfing at night, and I'm not talking about surfing the waves, I'm talking about the internet. Too much of any light after the sun goes down can mess up our sleep, which has been linked to diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and other health problems. Blue light can make it harder to fall asleep because it tricks your brain into thinking it's daytime. This prevents your body from releasing melatonin, a hormone that helps you to wind down. Walking and talking, not both. You're walking down the sidewalk and you need to send a quick text. How long does it take? A few seconds? Enough time to trip and stumble into a parking meter or step into car traffic? Just stop for a moment. Those seconds are not worth an accident. And it's not just outside. The most common injuries that happen while talking on the phone are at home, usually muscle and tendon strains, broken bones, and even head injuries. A friend of mine told me that she was simply talking on the phone while returning to her car, and boom, she fell over the concrete parking space stopper. She spent weeks in a boot and canceled a vacation. So if you're texting, just stop walking. How hard is it to pull our body over to move to the side or of the sidewalk or the aisle and just pause? Now, there are times that it's good to pretend that we're talking on the phone, like when we're walking alone in the dark while we're looking around and demonstrating that we are very much aware of our surroundings, lest the potential perpetrators see us as vulnerable or distracted. Be safe in dark areas. Demonstrate when you're walking alone. Demonstrate confidence to show that perpetrator that you are very much aware of your surroundings. A lot of people think that there is a cancer risk associated with cell phones. We can debunk this one. According to studies, and one study of studies, there's no solid link to cancer or even tumors found in people who use cell phones. It's something that scientists continue to study. But the American Cancer Institute reports that the human body does absorb energy from devices that emit radio frequency radiation. The only consistently recognized biological effect of radio frequency radiation absorption in humans that the general public might encounter is heating to the area of the body where the cell phone is held, like near your head, near your ear. But that heating is not sufficient enough to increase your body core temperature. So there are no other clearly established dangerous health effects to the human body from radio frequency radiation. Further, in a recent analysis by the World Health Organization, they reviewed 63 studies and found no evidence linking mobile phone radiation to brain cancer, indicating that also that cell phone use does not, somebody operating a cell phone doesn't increase their risk of developing a brain tumor. But if you're still worried about that, radiation from cell phones, you can limit your cell phone use or use it in speaker mode or with a headset or earpiece. Now, these next few seem related, or at least localized. In my reading for this segment, I frequently stumbled on terms like tendonitis, carpal and cubital tunnel syndrome, aggravation of arthritis, and more than one specialty outfit was advertising to evaluate text claw syndrome. There's something called a trigger thumb. This is when your thumb gets stuck in a bent position or pops when you try to straighten it. And that pop can hurt. It happens when the sheath surrounding your thumb tendon thickens so that the tendon can't slide around easily. Lots of texting or typing on a cell phone or just holding a smartphone tightly can trigger your thumb. The treatment for this includes cutting down on your cell phone use. There's thumb arthritis. While it's not clear that cell phones cause thumb arthritis, it can definitely make your symptoms worse. Thumb arthritis causes pain and tenderness at the base of your thumb where it meets the wrist. So pinching motions, gripping your phone, texting with your thumbs, and typing can all worsen arthritic conditions. There's no cure except for rest. And splints can help. Splints. Yay. Closely associated with that is cubital tunnel syndrome. If you lean on your elbows when you're texting, or you bend them to hold the phone close to your ear, it can irritate the ulnar nerve at your elbow. This can cause numbness and tingling in your ring and small fingers, and soreness on the inside of your elbow or your forearm. It's painful. And patients have to attempt to keep their arms straight and take breaks and move their arms in different directions. And night splints are worn to keep your arms straight. Now, I was diagnosed with cubital tunnel syndrome in the late 1990s, and I think society was somewhere between cellular bag phones and the handheld models that we have today. I really think that my condition was from keyboarding and associated with reaching age 40, a time that many become debilitated with constant typing and they develop carpal tunnel syndrome, minus cubital in the elbow region. And so day surgery was scheduled to relocate the nerve in between the layers of the muscle, so to provide some cushioning and support. Before and after this surgical intervention, I had to wear braces day and night. Braces, just great for work or sleeping while the Velcro stuck to my blanket. And it was great for my marriage in general. Ahem. Check out this one. Consider this. Interference by cell phone devices and radio frequencies. If you use your mobile phone very close to a medical device like a pacemaker or implantable defibrillator, they may not work the way they're supposed to. Think about the Parkinson's patients that have DBS devices, deep brain stimulation devices implanted that help control body movement. What do they do with cell phones or even smartwatches? Cell phones can interfere with certain kinds of hearing aids too. Ironically, many hearing aids can be controlled and enhanced by using the settings on a cell phone. Then there's distractions and social interactions. Even if you don't look at your phone, just putting your phone down in plain view when you're talking to somebody can get in the way of making a strong connection. Now, we've all done it or seen somebody do it, glancing at our phone lying nearby while we're in conversation, possibly a signal of disinterest or a desire to get the conversation over. It's especially a problem in close relationships and when you're talking about something meaningful. Maybe you save taking a peek or responding to a ding for later and focus on that person that's sitting right in front of you in real life. And then there are the embarrassing pocket dials. Let's shift now into the positive, how phones can enhance health. It's not too hard for us to generate a list of ways our cell phones can help us in health and care. There's medication reminders. We can set our timers. We count our steps and take note of our activity with Fitbits. Information can be transmitted to our medical team in real time, tracking heart rate, like blood sugar levels, blood pressure. They call it remote monitoring for healthcare tracking, heart monitoring, pain management, an assessment of your rehab efforts, collection of clinical data, and again, the blood pressure and glucose monitoring in real time. Our phones give us push notifications. Those notifications are delivered to our phones, reminding us of upcoming appointments and enabling us to confirm or reschedule our appointment. Then there are texts after the appointment, providing a phone number if you have any questions about what went on in your appointment. We can get into that portal and we can check in for our upcoming appointments, thereby first participating in our care. And secondly, saving on administrative time and costs, which we hope in some small way will stave off rising healthcare costs. You know, when you e-check in, it allows you to check the information that your provider has about you and make any changes by way of your portal. That way you don't have to stand in a lobby within earshot of everybody there explaining everything. Now, one cool thing that I have seen at e-check-in is a short trip through some questions about my well-being and checking for any acute needs. In these questions, I'm able to confidentially signal that I need help. It may be with food or heat or that I'm fearful of someone in my life. I could be in the lobby. I could be in the lobby in a domestic violence situation and can confidentially signal a need for intervention. The medical group or team that has such questions in their check-in are trained and prepared to respond, even if my alleged perpetrator insists on being with me at that medical encounter. After any medical appointment, you might tap into your healthcare portal to get your after-visit summary that's going to explain what went on, any medication changes in case something's new or discontinued. It may list your next appointment. One time I was working in an emergency room and I had one very tech-savvy patient. He was lying on the gurney in our overflow area, lying on the gurney in the hallway, and I was assisting him, and he was accessing his lab results and his MRI results in real time, laying on the gurney. You know, a survey may be delivered right to our phones after an appointment, and we're able to provide feedback on our care, the staff, and the delivery of services. Have you noticed that much of what we're talking about in this section applies to your participating in your own healthcare? That's a huge goal of any healthcare provider. We want you to be active participants in your care and outcomes. With a smartphone, you have easy access to a wealth of health-related information, including medical websites. Now, this part may dip back into the harm category. Please, please stick to well-renowned sites. It's a long-proven fact that we as patients are going to consult Dr. Google, so serve yourself with only solid information. You can access articles and get apps that provide information on symptoms and treatments and preventative measures. You can get a sleep app, a yoga app, or you can view chair exercises by video. Your cell phone can provide valuable medical information to healthcare personnel during a medical emergency if you're unable to communicate. There are, in case of emergency settings, visible to police and emergency personnel. Learn how to set your phone up for ICE in case of emergency for for Android and for iPhones. And then tell a friend. By the way, have you downloaded your copy of my In Case of Emergency checklist? It's helpful for you to have on hand on your phone or when traveling in a car, the same places that emergency personnel or a helpful neighbor may need to find them. Well, in case of an emergency. Ooh, let's talk some more about apps. As technologies advance, patients are becoming more comfortable with the use of apps. In many cases, they see it as an integral part of their treatment or symptoms management. Some of them even use apps for guidance about your general lifestyle. This is referred to as mobile health or mHealth. Did you know that there are now over 400,000 healthcare apps? However, last year there were only 86 approved apps in the National Health Service Library. This is an interesting app I just encountered. I just got an electric toothbrush that has an app, and the app can time me to make sure that I'm brushing long enough or tell me if I've spent enough time in a particular area of my mouth. It shows me as I go. It'll also enable music, my genre selection, of course, or I can opt in for a music shuffle. There are apps to help us exercise, to relax, to cook healthy meals. We can look up calories and carbs and learn to read nutritional labels on food products. Along with the tracking, reminders, and handheld encyclopedia that it is, mobile health can be a real boon to your health care. It too, though, needs to be used responsibly, like when Googling a diagnosis. Seems it's the operator, ourselves, who present the risks with our whens and whats and hows. We use the device. Let's return for a moment to mobile phone harm. Let's remember how much harm comes out of misuse of our devices, like timing, when we reach for them, how we use them. Turns out it's not the mobile phone that presents the risk or the rewards. It is, after all, only a device. Everything we've been talking about here is up to us, the operator. I hope that something that I've shared today provokes your reflection upon the powerful devices that we all carry. You are the determinant of harm or help, risk or reward. Thanks, everybody.